All right, tonight we're going to talk about dinosaurs. Tonight's talk is called Dire Dragons, The Missing Link in Dinosaur History. And of course, we're talking about a slightly different missing link than the missing links that the evolutionary community is continually looking for. But why don't we start? If you find what we're discussing this evening interesting, it's basically available in this book. And the book is designed with full color, glossy pages, easy to show people the evidence for creation. And so we're going to touch on a few things. We're not going to touch on everything that's in the book. And so the full story is at the back table. Well, when did God make the dinosaurs? If we take a look at this from Scripture, and we just leave our preconceived ideas behind and just read the book, we would conclude that all of the land animals were made on day six. Dinosaurs, by definition, were land animals. Therefore, they must have been made on day six. Adam and Eve were also made on day six. So if we just leave our preconceived ideas behind, dinosaurs and people must have lived together. Well, you only get the answers to the questions you ask, and if you don't ask the right questions, you won't get the right answers. And many people will never ask the question, what would the evidence actually look like in the real world if this history in the Bible is actually true? Well, we're going to ask that question tonight, and then we're going to see what evidence we see in the real world. Now, if you were here the first night, this is just a bit of a review, but we find carbon-14 in dinosaur bones. And you might say, so what? Well, theoretically, there should be no more carbon-14 left in any living organism after about 100,000 years. Now, that's theoretically. In other words, I'm not saying we've been here that long, but had we been here that long, there should be no carbon-14 left. Now, here's what's interesting is, and this has been done with many dinosaur bones. I've given one example. This example is also in the book. But not just dinosaur bones, other fossils that are supposedly millions of years old, there should be no carbon-14 left. But guess what? There is carbon-14 left. This is a report, the University of Georgia Center for Applied Isotope Studies under the direction of Dr. Alexander Cherkinsky. And this bone, according to Dr. Cherkinsky, was such a remarkably preserved specimen that he actually published it in the Journal of Radiocarbon in 2009. Now, because we did not tell him it was a dinosaur bone, he just assumed it was a bison bone. He actually used this bone of a duck-billed dinosaur, a hadrosaur, as an example to prove that you don't need all three components of the bone to get a good date. He isolated the bioapatite, charred bone, collagen, humic acid as the contaminant, and they all came back 23,000, 25,000. You might say, wait a minute, doesn't the Bible only give a span of about 6,000 or 7,000 years? It does, but don't forget, there are problems with radiocarbon dating. In other words, it's not an absolute dating method, and I've sent archaeological artifacts in, and once they calibrate everything, they give you a range of dates from here over to here. But here's the point. If there is carbon-14 left in dinosaur bones, the bones cannot possibly be millions of years old. Furthermore, we've also found soft, elastic tissue. Dr. Mary Schweitzer in particular published this in the journal Science in 2005. Soft, elastic tissue in a Tyrannosaurus rex femur that the evolutionary community claims is 68 million years old. Here we can see where the tissue was stretched apart and it bounced back into place. This has not only been found in this one bone, this has now been found in dinosaurs in various places in the world. Soft, elastic tissue resident in supposedly 68 million-year-old dinosaur bones is a huge problem. Not for the creationists, but for the evolutionary community. You see, everything that we know in biology tells us that these biomolecules should have broken apart, should have disintegrated eons ago if they really were that old. Everything we know says, yes, they can be thousands of years old, millions of years old. That's more like science fiction, not science fact. And that's just a couple examples. We could go on with other examples that dinosaurs really have lived recently. Well, living fossils. In 1938, off the coast of South Africa, a fishing vessel came to dock, and one of the creatures they had caught was one of these creatures. Now, of course, this is we have a cast out in the museum there. And what is it? It took them a couple months to figure out that it's actually a coelacanth. And coelacanth, according to the evolutionary theory, had gone extinct supposedly 70 million years ago, yet here is one recently living, not this particular specimen, but the one they found in 1938. And so it's one of the most famous living fossils of all time. Now, many people said this would be just like finding a living dinosaur. Furthermore, according to evolutionary theory, one of the ripodistrion fish, similar to this fish, supposedly evolved all the way up to university professors that now teach the theory of evolution, but this guy just simply forgot to evolve. Now, no doubt there are various types of coelacanths, but coelacanths have turned into coelacanths. One of the things that I do is excavate dinosaurs, particularly in the Hell Creek Formation in Montana. I've been doing that for a number of years. And the interesting thing is many of the organisms that are now fossilized that we find with the dinosaurs are still here with us today. Soft-shelled turtles still with us, willow trees still with us, figs still with us, crocodiles, alligators still with us, redwoods still with us, garfish still with us. These are all living fossils. Now, wait a minute. If all of these things we're finding with the dinosaurs are still with us, what about the dinosaurs? You see, it really shouldn't be any more surprising, even to the evolutionary community, to find a living dinosaur than to find a living crocodile or a living redwood. Yet, for some reason, we're told it's impossible that the reptilian dinosaurs like you see out in our museum could possibly be living today. Why is that? People have claimed to see what we would call dinosaurs, or supposedly extinct organisms, all over the planet. This is one in Africa that a particular group calls Mikili Mbembe. In fact, early last year there was a report in the Congo of a native who was taking his crop down the river in his boat, and he came across one of these creatures here. Now, later on, they talked to him, and they said, oh, it must just have been a crocodile or something like that. And he said, no, I have a gun. I'm not afraid of a crocodile. I kill crocodiles all the time. This is something very different. Reports going back to the early 1900s, is a brontosaurus roaming Africa's wilds? Is it possible? Well, like I say, it really shouldn't be that surprising. It should be no more surprising than living crocodiles or living redwoods. Well, dinosaurs were known for centuries as dragons. Now, in the 21st century, when we hear the word dragon, we say, ah, that's a mythical creature. Well, you'd be interested to know, and as we're going to see, the early paleontologists did not believe that the word dragon was a reference to mythical creatures. In fact, the early paleontologists had no problems calling what we now call dinosaurs dragons. People have been finding dinosaur bones all over the world for 2,000 years, people like the Chinese who've always called them dragons. Here we have a Chinese account written over 1,700 years ago. This account of a dragon bone find is the earliest written description of a dinosaur fossil. So it's actually pretty easy to prove that one of the ancient words for dinosaur was, in fact, dragon. Well, are dinosaurs mentioned in the Bible? Well, most people would say no, but where did we get the word dinosaur? Well, the word dinosaur was coined in 1841 by Sir Richard Owen, and it was first published in 1842. By the way, Sir Richard Owen was a creationist. He believed that dinosaurs were the monsters that God created. We're also going to see that Richard Owen, the very man who invented the word dinosauria, apparently did so he could classify these dragons scientifically. In other words, even Richard Owen had no problem talking about these creatures as dragons, even decades after the word dinosaur had been coined. Why don't we find the word dinosaur in the Bible? Well, here we are, 2012. King James was originally translated in 1611. Of course, we had the Geneva Bible before that, and if you're a Bible scholar, there were English translations. But the word dinosaur wasn't invented until 1841. And I don't think we would expect to find that modern word in the Bible, but we do find the original word, which is dragon, 230 years after the word, or sorry, after the King James was published, the word dinosaur was coined. Early paleontologists often referred to dinosaur fossils as dragons. This is the Book of the Great Sea Dragons. This is by Thomas Hawkins, Esquire, and this was published in 1840. Richard Owen coined the word dinosauria in 1841, and Thomas Hawkins is basically writing this book, and he has 20 plates. In other words, 20 pictures of these fossils that he had discovered and prepped, and then he later sold to the British Museum, which is the original name for the Natural History Museum, and now we have a separate British Museum, and it gets complicated. But nevertheless, notice the Hebrew writing up here, and then it's transliterated into English. Gedolim Taninim of Moses. Wait a minute. What's he talking about Moses for? I thought this was a science publication. I thought this was a publication about ichthyosaurs and plesiosaurs. It is. But this early paleontologist believed that these ichthyosaurs and plesiosaurs, which are marine reptiles, were the Gedolim Taninim of Moses, which is Genesis chapter 1. The King James says whales, but in the original Hebrew is tanin, dragon. These are the sea dragons. Now, it's interesting when you read the plates, because this is a scientific publication. A dragon from the Leos Shale of Street, that's not in the middle of the street, but in Street, as in the name of the town, in England. And look at every, I've highlighted every place that it talks about a dragon. These are all dragon bones, but these aren't mythological creatures. Let's take a look at this one. A dragon from the Leos Shale of Street, 1835, there it is. What is it? It's an ichthyosaur. Here we have here, dragon from Street, the town Street, 1834, what is it? It's a plesiosaur. And so even the early paleontologists had no problem using the original word for these creatures. It would be sort of like coming with me and we're going to be digging up some fossil dogs. And so my buddy says, hey, come over here, take a look at this amazing fossil dog I found. Oh, hey, that's pretty cool. We're going to have to name it. And we're going to have to publish this in the scientific literature. So we come up with a genus named Canis. And your little pooch it runs to today, he's Canis familiaris. Or we have Canis lupus, wild dogs, etc. See, the point is that just as we talk about dogs, they talked about dragons in a common sense, but as soon as you publish it in the scientific literature, you have to classify it scientifically. And so that's where we get the word dinosauria. It's not that they forgot about dragons, it's just that they now classified them scientifically. This is in the Natural History Museum in London. You can see Hawk here. That's for Hawkins, Thomas Hawkins, Esquire. He wrote the Book of the Great Sea Dragons in 1840. And you'll see beside here it says sea drag, period. Sea dragon. This is still on display. If you don't believe me, you can go see it for yourself. It's easy to prove that the early paleontologists were calling these dragons, just like people throughout the centuries were calling these creatures dragons. Now that's interesting because there are all kinds of dragon legends that these dragons weren't just dead bones. They were alive and well. You can take a look at the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle, and you can see that there were episodes where dragons would attack certain villages, and then they tried to kill the dragon. Folks, these aren't mythological things. It wasn't until the end of the 19th century, the early 20th century, that the evolutionary community got a hold of the training universities, etc., that they basically tried to stop using the word dragon. And in 100 years, we all think that dragon is nothing but a mythological creature. Completely untrue. Dinosaur fossils are called dragons even after the word dinosaur is coined. Let's take a look at this. Early paleontologists and dinosaur bones. Here we have Richard Owen. Now, this is actually not a quote from Richard Owen. This is a quote from Emily Tennyson, and you may know her husband, fairly well-known poet, Alfred Tennyson. This is from her journal, dated July 23rd, 1865, and she says this, Professor Owen arrived. Alfred and Professor Owen enjoyed their trip to Brightstone and returned in high spirits. They spread out their luncheon on Mr. Fox's lawn. They looked at the great dragon, which is quite new to the world and quite answers expectations. He never saw one so sheathed in armor and thought of calling it Eucanthus vectianus, most interested he was. This was about a trip taken with Richard Owen and she calls it the great dragon, Eucanthus vectianus. We know that that's a polacanthus. It's like an ankylosaur dinosaur, an armored dinosaur. This was 24 years after the word dinosaur was coined. Well, let's move further on. This talked about Mr. Fox's lawn. Who was he? This was the Reverend William Fox, a pretty important figure in early paleontology. This is what the BBC said. Dinosaurs were his passion, so much so that he gained the respect and friendship of scientists such as Sir Richard Owen and John Hulk, president of the Geological Society of London in 1882. Fox was described as putting, quote, always the bones first and the parish next, end quote, and wished for a permanent position in Brightstone, saying, quote, I cannot leave this place while I have any money left to live on. I take such deep joy in hunting for old dragons, end quote. By the way, he wrote this letter. This particular letter that we're reading here was written to Sir Richard Owen, who invented the word dinosaur in 1841. And we have clear proof that they were communicating with each other, the man who invented the word dinosaur, and he had no problem just simply calling him by their common name, dragon. Now this becomes seriously important. Over two decades after the word dinosaur was coined, Richard Owen and his buddies were still talking about them amongst themselves simply as dragons. When we look back, further back in history, is there any evidence that there was anything but just the dead bones? And as I've mentioned, there is evidence, such as the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle and many, many other legends. But tonight I want us to take a look at artwork. Is there any evidence that dinosaurs and humans lived together recently? Well, we already took a look at the carbon 14. We took a look at the eyewitness accounts. We took a look at the possibility inherent in living fossils. We took a look at the soft tissue. And now we're going to take a look at artwork. A couple historical accounts here just to whet your appetite. This is the World Book Encyclopedia. The dragons of legend are strangely like actual creatures that have lived in the past. They are much like the great reptiles, dinosaurs, which inhabited the earth long before man is supposed to have appeared on earth. Dragons were generally evil and destructive. Every country had them in its mythology. An Irish writer recorded an encounter with a large beast with iron nails on its tail, which pointed backwards. Its head was shaped a little bit like a horse's. It had thick legs and strong claws. Now, this fits the description of a number of dinosaurs, but let's use the common one here, Stegosaurus. Had a head a little bit like a horse's. Large claws, powerful legs, and here's the most interesting part of the description, nails on its tail which pointed backwards. Now, if you had seen one of these creatures, and you didn't have any of the 20th, 21st century terminology, you might say that those look like nails on the tail which pointed backwards. Here's what's interesting. Today, we call them tail spikes. I believe that dragons, the legends and the depictions, are actually representations of dinosaurs that people have encountered in history. Now, sometimes those images get embellished, but we're going to take a look at some of the better imagery here tonight. Dinosaurs in ancient artwork. Now, Carl Sagan was a pretty famous individual, and of course, he was an evolutionist, had the program. And he wrote this book, The Dragons of Eden, Speculations on the Evolution of Human Intelligence. Now, really, that's what the book is about. But he makes some passing comments about dragons. And basically, Carl Sagan says, you know, it's amazing when you look at these dragon stories, they sure sound like dinosaurs. In fact, he was so convinced that people were actually drawing dinosaurs, and that's what dragons were, that he had to come up with an explanation for it. Basically, his explanation summarized is like this. When we go back in our evolutionary heritage, once upon a time we were little mammals scurrying beneath the feet of the dinosaurs millions of years ago. And those evolutionary memories were passed up the evolutionary chain until eventually we became human with the ability to communicate via voice, stories, and artwork. And then we communicated the concept of dragons, which were really dinosaurs. You know, it's interesting. That's basically a falsified view of evolution known as Lamarckian evolution. And it's the idea that if you inherit something, you learn something in your lifetime, or, you go to the gym every day, and by the time you're 40 years old, you got these big muscles. And so you have your baby boy, and he's going to inherit those muscles, right? No, he's going to have to go to the gym just like you did. See, certain things we just simply don't inherit. So there's a new idea. This goes back to about the year 2000. The First Fossil Hunters by Adrian Mayer, Paleontology in Greek and Roman Times. And Adrian Mayer believes that the ancients were digging up the fossils. And then they were reconstructing them. But even Adrian Mayer admits, if you read through her own book and you look at how these ancients were supposedly reconstructing these bones, even if she's right, speculation, okay? We don't know if they dug them up. But even if she was right, the one thing we can gain from her book is that all of the reconstructions were completely inaccurate. I have about 15 reasons in my book why the ancients could not have excavated the dinosaurs, put them together, figured out what the flesh looked like, figured out what the texture of the scales looked like. 15 reasons why this is basically an impossibility. It's possible today because of about 200 years of combined work on fossils, thousands of fossils being excavated. But anyway, this is what's being proposed. She wrote another book, Fossil Legends of First Americans, and she said, it's amazing when you hear the stories of these American Native Indians really sound like what we would call flying reptiles and marine reptiles and things like that. They must have saw the fossils. Well, I can guarantee you that you can go down into the States, you can come to Alberta with me, and we can wander around for thousands of years, and you're never going to find a fossil that uncovers itself like you see in the front cover of her book. The fossils weather out, they break up, they basically turn back into soil after several hundred years. Impossible. But even if they did, even if I grant them that miracle of somehow coming upon the fossils or even excavating them, here's what's interesting. If we find depictions of dinosaurs in ancient artwork, then the actual fossils of those particular creatures should be found in close proximity to the artwork. And in many cases, they're not. In many cases, you'll find a particular dinosaur depicted that's only been found literally on the other side of the planet. That's just one of the 15 reasons why this doesn't work, by the way. Well, could the artwork really be the result of ancients digging fossils? We've just touched on one reason why that couldn't be possible. Well, let's move on to South America. This is Machu Picchu, one of the most beautiful places I've ever been to. Historically, a fairly dark place, spiritually speaking, but beautiful nonetheless. Now, we had heard stories over the years that the pre-Columbians were depicting creatures that looked like dinosaurs. And so one of the first places we started was the Herrero Larco Museum in Lima, Peru. There are over 30,000 ceramic vessels on display there. Actually, some of them were on display, and then you go sort of into the back room, if you will. And I spent about 2 days there. I figure I've looked at about at least a minimum of 12,000 artifacts in that collection. Now, here's an interesting one here. This is from the Huari culture. This is in southern Peru, pre-Columbian culture, about 500 to 900 A.D., and there's an interesting creature up here. This is actually a guy fishing. Fish here, fish here, fish here, stylized. There's a bird there. There's another bird there. And here's a man in his little reed boat. We'll take a closer look. Oh, there's a creature on top of his hat. And there's a reconstruction of a Protoceratops. And the more and more artwork that we look at, the more and more it's interesting. It looks like the frill back here. This looks almost like a beak, which is what the Protoceratops had. Notice a big tail out the back here. I believe that there's evidence all over planet Earth that dinosaurs and people did live together. Regardless of where we're at culturally in the 20th, 21st century, that this is mocked at day in and day out, the fact is that over 40% of Canadians believe this. Angus Reid poll was done a few years ago, and 42% of Canadians said, yes, we believe dinosaurs and humans live together. Interesting. Here we are, a little bit further north in Peru. This is near Trujillo, and these are the remains of the Shamu culture. This is known as Chan Chan. And I want us to take a look at some of the artwork that's on the walls here. The Shamu culture is roughly about 1,000 to 1,470 A.D. And we have some interesting creatures drawn here. Now, none of us would probably ever draw them looking like that, but they're still recognizable fish. And so when we're looking at ancient artwork, the one thing that is key is we need to understand that we have a particular stylization in artwork today. 21st century stylization. I could put an ad up on here, and perhaps I'll add this to a presentation at a later date, but I could put an ad up from the 1960s, and you would immediately recognize it's from the 1960s. I could put something up from Nazi Germany, and you'd say, that's 1940s. How do you know that? Because we have a particular stylization in each time period, but we also have different types of stylization in different cultures. And so stylization is key. We can't forget that. Along the bottom here, we have some other interesting creatures. Clearly a bird. We could make a further guess as to what it is. Well, here we have a textile from the Shamu culture. And there are interesting creatures all along the bottom, all along the top here. And there it is there. You see an interesting circular pattern here. Now you might say, well, that looks like a bird head. I agree. But I've seen many, many, many textiles of the pre-Columbians when they drew birds, and it's very easy to recognize. Even the most simplistic bird basically shows the tail. It shows the wing feathers, etc. This is something other than a bird. It has the long tail that coils up. By the way, we have found circular scales on dinosaurs. Actually, we see them on other reptiles as well, but we do find them on dinosaurs. So there is the textile up top, and here is a reconstruction based on fossils of a Brachylophosaurus, a duck-billed dinosaur. And it's amazing how many similarities there really are between the textile and this creature. Is it really possible that dinosaurs and people lived together recently? And I believe the answer is a resounding yes. Here we're looking at a Shanghai artifact. This is a pre-Columbian Peruvian artifact as well. And it's interesting because it has this little bump on the back. We cannot say with 100% certainty. We'd have to ask the artist, what were you drawing? And of course, that's not possible anymore. But it's interesting when we compare this to something like a juvenile pteranodon. Shanghai culture, roughly the same time period as the Shamu we just looked at, about 1,000 to 1,450 A.D. Now, here's an interesting artifact, and I actually had to trade a few people, or trade one guy, another artifact to get this artifact. And he said, you know, it's weird, it looks like a dinosaur. And I said, oh, really? That's interesting. And it never did have ears, but it has four legs. Now, wait a minute, we have two groups of animals that don't have visible ears in some cases, either birds or certain types of reptiles, and only one of those groups has four legs, and that's reptiles. Are there any reptiles that might look like this? Well, we compare that to a juvenile Mosasaurus, and it's rather interesting. Let's move on. Let's move on to Africa. We're going to take a look at some artifacts. This is an artifact from the Dogon culture. This is 1800s. And you'll notice there's a man riding on the back. Also notice the diamond-shaped pattern that was typical for the depiction of reptilian scales among various different African groups. Now, this is supposed to be a chameleon. Now, I've seen lots of chameleons in African artwork, and none of them have people riding on the backs for an obvious reason. Okay. Let's take a look at some of them. There's a chameleon. There's a chameleon, tongue coming out. There's a chameleon, tongue coming out. This is all African artwork up here. There's a real chameleon. The other thing that's interesting about chameleons is they don't really have much of a what? Neck. And notice the strong jawline here. So we've had all kinds of suggestions from turtle to horse. Well, let's keep looking. It's definitely not a chameleon. The Africans were pretty good artists most of the time. And this has a long neck and it has a very strong jawline. And it's a long creature, not round like a turtle. Okay, let's move on. We'll get rid of him. Here we have the artifact. And here we have a creature known as a Roman nose dinosaur. And this is known as an ornithopod dinosaur. And they have very strong jaws. They have fairly long necks like this. Interesting. Interesting because we have stories, as I mentioned, just last year in Africa of people who have claimed to see dinosaurs. This is up above. This is in Mali, Africa, up above where the sighting was last year. But very, very interesting. Here's another one from the same culture, another man writing on the back. The interesting thing is when you take a look at these, this is an Oranosaurus dinosaur compared to the artifact previous to it, another ornithopod. So there's the artifact, and there's a reconstruction at the bottom based on fossils of an Oranosaurus dinosaur. Now, the Africans did depict people on the backs of animals, such as horses, camels, and apparently they had some fun with crocodiles. According to the crocodile hunter, now deceased, this is exactly where you want to be on a crocodile, is on his back. And so the Dogons were having fun here, apparently. They did depict turtles, and they looked like turtles, and there's another horse on the top. I think we have powerful, positive evidence that dinosaurs have lived very recently in various regions, as we've discussed, including Africa. This is from Ethiopia. It's an Ethiopian Coptic Bible. It's not really a Bible in a sense. It's basically a bunch of stories. And these were made from about the 1400s up until the middle of the 1800s. And here we have St. George and the dragon. Now, the dragon doesn't have any wings. He's got a large hind leg here. We can't see his front legs. Here we have the tail coming back. And it's interesting, he's got a forked tongue there. It's interesting because most dinosaurs today are not depicted with forked tongues. But if you look at the most dinosaur-like creature alive today, the Komodo dragon, he has a forked tongue. There's a reconstruction of a T-Rex. You might say, wow, that's a small T-Rex. Well, they did hatch out of eggs about the size of footballs and then grew up from there. So it really shouldn't be that surprising that we have T-Rex of various sizes. Well, let's move on to China. I think this is some of the most remarkable artwork that I have come across in this area. Now, these have all been authenticated by a third-party expert on ancient Chinese jades, turquoise, nephrite carvings, and these are Hongshan culture. Hongshan culture is a culture from China that lived about over 4,000 plus years ago. And it's amazing when you compare them to dinosaurs like this Ceratopsian at the bottom, a Centrosaurus. Here's another one, same culture, Hongshan culture, over 4,000 years. Here's a Stegosaurus. Here's another one, Hongshan culture, over 4,000 years. Here's a Gracilaceratops. Here's another one, Hongshan culture, over 4,000 years old. And here's a juvenile Protoceratops for comparison. Let's move on to Mexico. A couple years ago, we went down to Guatemala. And Guatemala was basically the way we got into the southern part of Mexico. And so we got up about 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, and we took the Guatemalan outback roads, as I call them. And it took us about 5 hours to get to the river we were looking for, the Usumacinta River. And we took the Usumacinta River, then we hung a right on the Lacantun River. And before we knew it, we were at this place called El Planchon de las Figuras, the place of the figures. Now, there's my good friend over here, Harry Nyborg. He travels around the world with me. Great guy. He also owns the Big Valley Creation Science Museum in Big Valley, Alberta. There's some of our equipment set up here for photography. And we got there, and I said, there's no way we're going to find anything. We were looking for something very specific. And I remember just praying, Lord, if we're going to find this, you're going to have to show it to us, because I don't see anything here. Within 5 minutes, I had found the head of the carving that I was looking for. Now, this is done by the Mayans, and these carvings are somewhere between 250 AD and 900 AD. Some suggest right around the 500 AD mark, and I'm tracing it with chalk meticulously because I was skeptical of the picture I had before, and it was going in my book, and I wanted to make sure with certainty, with my own eyes, that that really is what they carved. Well, we got there, we looked at it, and it definitely is what the Mayans had carved. Now, we had a river runner. He was the only guy that knew how to get here. This is not a tourist place. In fact, there were some people living across the river that came over in their boat. They had no idea why we were there. They didn't know there were petroglyphs there, and they lived just across the river. And there it is. Well, what is it? Well, that's what our guide said. He said, what do you think it is? I said, well, it's definitely not a crocodile. Now, who am I to talk? Like, I deal with crocodiles every day in Alberta, right? He's the expert on crocodiles. He's the river runner of that area. He saw more crocodiles than any of us put together on this expedition. And he looked at it and he said, see, definitely not a crocodile. Definitely not a crocodile. So I just left it at that. The next morning, I showed him this picture. Now, this picture came out of a magazine that had been published 26 years before we were there. And basically what they did is they traced it with chalk like I did. They waited until nightfall, till it was just getting dusk. They set some lights around, and then they put their camera on time-lapse, and they traced it with flashlights. And so I wanted to make sure that they traced it accurately. Well, they did. El Planchon de la Figueras, there's really not much information about it on the World Wide Web. So we had to go there. This is what I showed him the next morning, our guide. And it was on my phone. I had clipped it out of the book. And I passed it over to him. And he looked at it. And he said, the Mayans must have seen Dinosaurio. I said, see. And it just clicks. So we went to another Mayan site, and he's looking all over, and he's looking for dinosaurs. And we went to another site I'm going to show you, and I showed it to him on my camera. He said, only one? I said, only one what? Dinosaurio. I said, see. That's an Hippacrosaurus, by the way. Here's the guide I'm talking about. And he said he is the direct descendant of the Mayans. Now, there are all of these depictions. This was sort of a touristy one that had been redrawn of a Mayan king, a Mayan leader. And he would point up to them, and he would say, look, there's another picture of me. His name was Ahinio. And Ahinio was a pretty neat guy. His English wasn't so good, but he would do anything for you. The next day, we went off to this site here called Banampac. This is in Chiapas, in southern Mexico. And we're interested in this particular building here. Now, there are depictions in this building, and they date from about 650 to 850 A.D. They're Mayan as well. I was not used to the heat. Anyway, this is room number two. And in room number two, we have this mural. Now, that's as good as you can get a picture of it. The reason is that these murals have a thin layer of calcite, calcium carbonate, that has actually formed on top of them over the last, hundreds of years. However, back in the 1940s, they did something you would never be able to do today. They took kerosene, and they painted it over the murals, which caused the calcite to become temporarily translucent so you could see through it. And two artists depicted, basically redrew all the details of what they saw sitting in these rooms. And so, right here we have a man, and we have an interesting creature on his head. So we're going to take a look at that. There's what you actually see. Very hard to make out, but there's his eyes, there's his mouth of the man, and he's got this creature on his head here. This comes down like this. This comes down like this. Here is the redrawing that was done back in the 1940s. It's remarkable when you look at it. You can try to figure out crocodile. You can take a look at an iguana. You can try to look at all of these animals. It really doesn't fit. Furthermore, it's red, which is kind of interesting because they had jaguars depicted and they were the right color and other creatures. So there is this creature from Bonampak on this headdress. And here is a reconstruction of a Deinonychus antaropus. That's the full-size dinosaur that's out here. Basically, this guy would have been the same size compared to a human as this is. Now, don't forget, this is less than 100 kilometers away from the site we just looked at. as the crow flies, or maybe as the vulture flies. Let's move on to the United States. Now we find all kinds of artwork, rock art. There are pictographs and petroglyphs, and generally, you know, you can tell what many of them are. This is a sheep, this is a bird, this is a man, you know, etc. Now what if we were to find something like this? This is actually one of the pieces of artwork that's been known for quite some time. Well, we actually do find that at Natural Bridges National Monument near Blanding, Utah, and I've been there a couple times. Fran Barnes said this. Now, this says 1995. This is actually a reprint. It goes back to 1979. Fran Barnes is a recognized authority on rock art of the American Southwest. He writes, quote, "There is a petroglyph in Natural Bridges National Monument that bears a startling resemblance to a dinosaur, specifically a brontosaurus with a long tail and neck, small head and all." Well, brontosaurus was a mistake. Really, it's an apatosaurus, but we won't get into that. Everybody was calling him brontosaurus at that time. But he said, there's a petroglyph that looks like a dinosaur. Now, here we are. This is Natural Bridges, or sorry, this is Kachina Bridge within Natural Bridges National Monument in Utah. Quite a remarkable place. There's Kachina Bridge. That's where the petroglyph is there. Let's take a little bit closer look. And there it is up there. The problem is, it's really difficult to get pictures of. But when you walk down there and look at it, it's as clear could be. We actually stayed down there for a while, and people kept coming through, people from apparently all kinds of different backgrounds. We say, look at that up there. And we wouldn't give them any hint what we thought it was. Oh, look at the dinosaur. Hey, look at the dinosaur up there. And everybody basically said the same thing. Now, here's what's interesting. A guy by the name of Phil Center and Sally Cole, Dr. Phil Center, who's a paleontologist, him and Sally Cole went up here last year, I believe, 2011, and they published a thing that said, oh, it's just a mud stain, and this is that, and this is the other thing. Phil Center and I have been in communication. I said, Phil, did you go up on the ledge? Because you have to get up on the ledge to actually see it. And so far he told me, no, I haven't gone on the ledge. I didn't take a ladder. It's too hard to get a ladder down there. And so I will be contacting Phil and say, you know what, if we can work together, I'd be more than happy to bring the ladder and let you get up there and actually look at it. It is not a mud stain. Nevertheless, we're going to highlight it for you. If you do get to go there, you'll see that I'm right. You can see it very easily with your eyes, which are much better designed than the cameras we have, which is another evidence for creation. There's the tail, there's the body, there's the neck, there's the head. There's also a piece that comes out here, which I believe is the tongue. This is just rough stuff on the stone. This is just rough stuff on the stone. And there's a triangular portion that comes on the back here as well. What was interesting is as I was driving around the United States with my one-ton diesel, frequently filling up with diesel fuel, often ending up at Sinclair gas stations, I noticed the resemblance of their iconic dinosaur to the one here. And so let's take their dinosaur and basically let them walk across the screen there. I don't think there's any doubt whatsoever that what the Anasazis were depicting. This ranges in date somewhere between 150 to 1200 AD. Archaeologists say it's right around the 700 AD mark, but in that range. I believe dinosaurs were living very recently and not just in one or two places, but literally all over the globe. Well, let's move on to the Netherlands. And this is an illuminated manuscript. This is the Book of Hours, Yusuf Serum, published about 1440. In fact, we even know who the artist probably was that did this. Now, here we have St. George and the dragon again. You might say, wait a minute, that's a different dragon. True. But the man who became known as St. George died in 303 AD, and it wasn't until the 10th or 11th century that there was any talk about St. George killing a dragon. And so I think it became in vogue at that time, and so St. George all of a sudden kills the dragon. And so depending on what region and who was depicting it, they depicted the dragons, I believe, that they were familiar with. So here we have this manuscript dating from about 1440, and here we have a dinosaur which would be the same size compared to the horse and the human, known as a coelophysis. Look at the length of the neck, look at the head, look at the hind legs, the long tail out the back. Let's move on to France. This is Francois. He was king of France from 1515 to 1545. And this is the castle in Chambord, Chateau du Chambord, a beautiful castle and beautiful place. First time I was there was a few years ago. I've been there since then. And Francois, like some of the other kings and queens, if you will, he had an emblem. And his emblem was the salamander. But I need to stop there because in the Middle Ages, there were two types of salamanders in France that were talked about. There was the regular salamander you could basically step on if you were kind of mean. And then there was what's known as the legendary salamander. This was a huge creature. This was a vicious beast. That would be the same basic idea as the dragons of other nations. Well, let's take a look at this legendary salamander. There we can see F for Francois, and there are some of these salamanders. There are probably over 800 of these depicted in this castle alone. There it is there. Definitely not a salamander like the little ones we have today. They don't have long necks. These ones do. Salamanders don't have scales. These ones do. There's another depiction. Now, this is 16th century. Let's move over to Blois. We're now in Blois, France. And this is the Francois wing of the Chateau Royal in Blois. And again, Francois wanted to make sure that his emblem was everywhere. And so let's take a look at one of these. Here's one on the outside. Well, it's interesting. If you look at the proportions and some of the details, it looks very similar to what we would call a plateosaurus. Basically, peg-like teeth, same shape, same size front to back. Peg-like teeth, same shape, same size front to back. Take a look at the back of the neck here, here. Here's what it looked like. Notice the length of the neck. Notice the strong claws. Notice the tail out the back here. So there is a depiction, and here is a reconstruction based on fossils of a plateosaurus. Inside, we have this interesting tapestry, which dates from the mid-16th century. And over here is kind of a cute little guy hiding out in the weeds or whatever there. So here's a clear shot of it. There he is there. And it's remarkable when you compare this to a juvenile dinosaur that's only been found in the United States, specifically in Montana, known as a Myasaur peeblesaurum. Okay, there he is. Now, you need to understand that the artists that drew the reconstructions had never seen these pictures. They had never seen the artifacts. The first time that they saw these comparisons is when I sent them a book after it was published. Notice where the nostrils are up on the top, exactly where they should be. Notice this has a ear right here, and here we have a little notch here. By the way, this coloration came from a modern lizard. So we didn't just make that up. They're modern lizards with that exact. I sent them a picture of the modern lizard. I said, make the dinosaur this color. All kinds of different colored lizards today. Orange, purple, blue. Here we are in Azay-le-Rideau. And here I am standing by the fireplace. You can see Francois' emblem there again, all over France. And here's a room which has a table. And this table was made in 1630. The reason I know that is the artist was nice enough to put the date on it. Something we don't typically do anymore. But there it is. Well, what is he? So, oh, that's just a dragon. Okay, definitely is a dragon. That's definitely what they called it, because that's the old word for dinosaur. And I want us to take a think about something. Any guesses on what that is? This was published, I believe, in 1697. Weird looking, isn't it? The reason it's weird looking is because you're looking at artistic stylization of the Middle Ages in Europe. It's a shark, great white shark. This is from a scientific analysis, actually a dissection of a shark head done by Nicholas Steno. Now, if this is a shark, then there's no doubt. Remember, artistic stylization. Then there's absolutely no doubt what this is. Same time period, same type of stylization. Compare that to an Albertosaurus. The evidence is absolutely amazing. All over planet Earth, there's evidence that we've never been told about. Why? You only get the answers to the questions you ask. And if you don't ask the right questions, you won't get the right answers. Moving on to England. This is St. Andrew's Hall in Norwich. Got to be careful when you're over there. If you say Norwich, you'll get corrected. You know, they drop the ends off in Norwich. St. Andrew's Hall, this was basically built in the 15th century. And on the south entryway, there's a dragon. Actually, there's a figure, and he's breathing out another figure, and he's breathing out two dragons. Medieval artwork, what do you make of it? Nevertheless, it's interesting that this guy looks a lot like a juvenile T-Rex. 15th century Norwich. By the way, Norwich is known for dragon stories, dragon depictions, dragon legends. This is King Edward IV. And he minted a coin. This is called the Gold Angel. This is the second minting from 1471 to 1483 during his second reign. And these were minted in London. They're hammered gold coins. Here we have St. Michael slaying the dragon. The dragon, of course, is a picture of Satan. But when we take a look at this dragon, and we take a look at the details, notice the bumps along the back here, notice the scales, notice how the leg goes, notice the three toes, possible claws, bump up above the eye, possibly sharp teeth here. When we look at those details, it's amazing how close it matches some of our reconstructions, such as Carnotaurus. Notice the bumps along the back, notice the legs, three toes, claws. Notice here we can't see a front leg. The Carnotaurus had such a small front leg that if these creatures were moving around in front of you, you would have never noticed it. Same thing with Tyrannosaurus rex. You might say, well, hey, some of your dragons don't have front legs. Now, when you dig them up and they don't move, you can put the bones together and say, oh, hey, look, they had little front legs. I watched an IMAX movie when I was down in Utah of the T-Rex. And what was remarkable when I was watching the screen and watching this 3D animated T-Rex walk around, the one thing that you would not have seen on a moving T-Rex is his front legs. And I believe that's one of the reasons these depictions are missing them. The Carnotaurus had even smaller front legs. But nevertheless, if you take a look at the basic shape of this creature and the basic shape of this creature, I never used this for 2 years. Why? Because I said, well, it's just a dragon. And then one day I sat down and said, wait a minute, if that was meant to depict a dinosaur, how would I change it? And I walked away and said, the only thing I could possibly imagine is this right here. What is it? Perhaps it's a series of scales leading into the ear canal. We don't see any scales on here, but don't forget, we don't have all the soft tissue from the dinosaurs yet either. This is an amazing depiction of a creature that most children today would have no problem recognizing as a dinosaur. Most adults would not have a problem recognizing as a dinosaur. Here we are, Carlisle Cathedral, Northern England. This cathedral was built in 1122 AD, and they've been having regular services there for over 900 years. I just love the history over there. You know, it just amazes me, being a North American. In 1496, Bishop Richard Bell was buried in the floor of the cathedral, and we got special permission to see this because most people aren't allowed to even look at it. This carpet you see was actually on top of it. The idea is supposedly to preserve the tomb. Maybe not. Nevertheless, there are all kinds of animals engraved on this from 1496. Here we have a fish. Here we have, any guesses? An eel. Okay, Albertans, landlocked Albertans aren't real good with this one. Okay, an eel. Here we have a medieval fox. Here we have a dog. Here we have a bat. Here we have a bird. Easily recognizable creatures. Now, what's interesting is when we went there to document this, an old lady heard, she's from the church, in the choir, whatever, must have been in her 80s, and she came down. She said, you must be very privileged to see this tomb. It hasn't been unveiled in 10 years. And I thought, oh, wow. So anyway, we kept taking pictures, and one of the guys was standing over us watching us, and he said, you know, some people say there are dinosaurs on this tomb. And I said, oh, really? And just kept taking pictures, round and round and round we go. This is what they call two mythical creatures. Now don't forget, people have been walking over it for 900 years. There it is there. Here's the back here, here's the back there, there's the head. This part is missing, it's been worn off. Here are dots because the tool was held at an angle, and that basically meant that these are deeper. So if we connect the dots here, we connect this up to here, and around here, this is what we end up with. 1496. It's interesting because even the evolutionists, some evolutionists have admitted that, yeah, that sure looks like a dinosaur. They must have dug up a dinosaur when they were quarrying rocks for the quarry. But here's the problem. As I mentioned in my book, that's not as easy to do as one might think. And there's a reconstruction of a sauropod known as a Volcanodon. I'm not saying it's the same kind, but it really does look like a sauropod dinosaur. Let me just go back. I want to point something out because I don't have it on the slides. Just about done. You see this over here? Now, you notice there's marks all over. Some people think that's an eye. This actually is very distinct triangular shape. There's some other ones here. I think those are tail spikes. And I looked at that and I said, well, I don't know of any sauropod dinosaurs that have tail spikes. Well, it just happens that there are sauropod dinosaurs that have tail spikes that look just like that, but none of them have ever been found in England. They've only ever been found in China. Two different types of sauropods. More details of that in my book. All right, we're going to move on to Spain. Here again we have Sant Jordi, St. George, and the dragon. And when I first saw this, I said, man, that looks like a crocodile or alligator, but what's with the long neck? And look at the weird head and look at the teeth. And I looked at the teeth and I said, now that looks like the teeth of some sort of marine fossil reptile. Some of them have these weird teeth that jut out like that. And so I did a little more research and I found a creature known as a Nothosaurus. There he is. Now this was depicted in 1600 by Antoni Siderni. Remarkable altar cloth that he made. This, according to the evolutionary theory, is over 200 million years ago, the fossil. In other words, this creature predates most of the dinosaurs, according to the theory of evolution. What in the world is he doing on a tapestry from 1600? Now, if you could look a little more closely, these teeth are large, then it jumped to small, small to the back. Large, jumped to small, small to the back. That's exactly what you see on the Nothosaurus. Scale for scale. Absolutely amazing. Here's what he would have looked like from the front, by the way. Quite an intimidating character. Reminds me of some of my school teachers in high school. Anyway, there is the tapestry, and here is a reconstruction based on the fossil record. I have no doubt whatsoever that the Bible is absolutely true from the beginning in every single aspect, including the declaration that all the land animals and people were made on the same day, which would have included the dinosaurs. I believe the dragons were dinosaurs, and I believe we have a seriously compelling case. This is in the Children's Museum in Indianapolis, and this display is of a dinosaur that was found a few years ago called Dracorex, and it says, is it a dragon or a dinosaur? And I say yes. Here we have the skull of Dracorex, and here's a reconstruction of Dracorex. And when they discovered this dinosaur, they said, wow, man, it looks like a dragon. Let's look at some more of the plaques here. It's a new type of dinosaur that looks like a dragon. When we saw this creature's head, we weren't sure what kind of dinosaur it was. Its spiky horns, bumps, and long muzzle looked more like a dragon. Not a surprise at all to anybody who has followed the scripture from the beginning. All of the land animals and people made on the same time, talking about dragons as being real creatures, sound like descriptions of dinosaurs. It is a great time to be a Bible-believing Christian. What we see in God's Word agrees with what we see in God's world. Psalms 119:160 says, Thy Word, God's Word, is true from the beginning, and every one of Thy righteous judgments endureth forever.